from the Star Rental Sports Desk. Your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, here we go. Happy Monday. Beautiful. How about this sunny, sunshiny Monday afternoon right here on Softie and Dick. Headlines are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Hey, you guys!
Jamal Bey is your Pac-12 Player of the Week. The Huskies take out Utah 83-79, sweeping Colorado, sweeping Utah. They've now won two in a row, and Dick, you know what that means.
What's that?
Two in a row. That's called a winning streak. It has happened before.
Career high 28 for Jamal Bey. 10 for 11 from the floor. 4 of 4 from downtown. The Dogs now 2 and 7 in the Pac-12. And guess what? They're not in last place anymore.
Yay! Dick.
Now up to 10th in the conference. 3 and 11 overall. It's the second time in 13 months they've won two games in a row. They will host Wazoo Sunday at 5 o'clock right here on KJR.
Wow. Well, we have a Super Bowl. Bucks and Chiefs. Huge blow for Kansas City. They lose starting left tackle Eric Fisher for the Super Bowl. Suffered an Achilles tear in the fourth quarter of their win.
Eagles are hiring former Charger offensive coordinator Shane Steichen as their new offensive coordinator. Adam Schefter reporting yesterday the Seahawks want to interview Bills offensive coordinator, former Hurricanes quarterback Ken Dorsey, and the Chargers are hiring Saints quarterback coach Joe Lombardi as their new OC.
Buffalo wide receiver Cole Beasley gets the Tough Man of the Month award. He says he broke his fibula in week 16.
Wow.
Played three playoff games with a broken leg.
I won't even do a show with a broken fibula, by the way. And all I do is talk. Cactus League telling Major League Baseball they would like to delay the start of spring training because of the high COVID rate in Maricopa County in Arizona.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
Hey, Seattle.
This is Softie and Dick.
You know, I always wonder what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes, right? I was wondering after a couple shows we did, Dick, what it would have been like after a couple of 50-point games to be Wilt Chamberlain back in the 1960s.
Ooh.
How much fun that would have been.
That'd be interesting.
Okay, what it would have been like to be Tiger Woods to win the Masters a couple years ago, Michael Phelps in the pool in Beijing and London winning all those gold medals. I wonder what it's like to be a Green Bay Packer football fan right now on a Monday afternoon after watching that yesterday at Lambeau Field. Because you spend the whole year, everybody always says throughout the regular season, man, there's that mystique about Lambeau. Want to avoid going to Lambeau,
yep.
Can't go to Lambeau, and they finally get a conference championship at home. They fall behind 28-10. They have a shot to tie the game late in the fourth quarter, and they elect to put the game in the hands of Mason Crosby and the Packer defense as opposed to Aaron Rodgers. How peeved would you be right now if you were a Packer fan?
I would be very upset. I'd be upset, as upset, maybe even more upset.
Yeah.
At how they handled the last minute of the first half versus how they handled the last 3 minutes of the second half. My God, I mean, you could not have possibly played an offensive/defensive series any worse than they played those two consecutive series with about a minute and a half left to go in the first half. It's unbelievable.
That was brutal. And, you know, talked about this on Twitter yesterday. I'm watching that game. There's two things that came to mind for me as I'm watching the game, and it was like it was unfolding in slow motion. First of all, I see the Packer defense on that play for the touchdown at the end of the half, and I'm thinking in my mind's eye in my head, they got 10 guys, like, right there on the TV screen. And if you can see 10 guys on your TV screen, then that means there's room over the top to get somebody burned, and that's exactly what happened to Kevin King. The first call I made at halftime was to Hugh Millen to find out what the hell was going on. Was that more on Kevin King, or was it more on the Packer defense? And we will paraphrase, because I don't want to put words in his mouth for crying out loud. He'll join us on Friday at 5:20 and talk about it, that if you're Kevin King and they're playing that kind of defense, you're being asked to defend the sideline for a quick route that could get them closer to a field goal and also defend the bomb over the top. So he thought it was more bad coaching and bad scheme on that play than it was Kevin King's fault. And then late in the game, in the fourth quarter, look, man, I realize that you've got one of the great passing quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, but you got to the Tampa Bay 8 with 2.5 minutes left to go, and you don't run the ball one time. Not one time to get yourself closer. Not one time to chew up some clock. Because to me, there's two things I'd be thinking about if I'm Matt LaFleur, and we can talk to Mike about this later in the week. Number one, I got to score, obviously. Number two, it's four down territory. No matter what happens, I'm using all four downs. And number three, there's also a part of me in the back of my head thinking, let's chew as much clock as we can to not give the ball back to Tom Brady. And they were 0-for-3 on every single one.
You know you're preaching to the choir when you're talking about running inside the 5-yard line to me. See, we don't even have to go there. I mean, teams have just decided. You watched those two games yesterday. Teams have just decided we're not going to run the football anymore. It's turned into Canadian Football League is what the NFL has turned into right now. But going back to that first half play, I mean, I have the acumen barely of a fifth grade flag football coach, because that's all I am. And I'm sitting there with my fifth grade quarterback, little Dixon Fain, and I see exactly what you see on the screen. I was like,
10 guys.
I go, oh my God, Dixon, they should double move him right here. There's nobody back there. And sure enough, boom. And I mean, that was as easy to see as anything if you're paying any attention at all. And Tom Brady, they did a great job. I saw today on, I don't know if it was ESPN or Fox or one of those talking head shows, they showed a close-up of Tom Brady's eyes on that play. They like zoomed in the camera.
Yeah.
And he did such an amazing job. He was just staring Kevin King down the middle of the field. So Kevin King was shaded to the inside of Scotty Miller. And Tom's eyes just kept pulling him further and further and further to the inside. And then the last second before he pulls the trigger, you don't see Tom's head move. You just see his eyes shift over to the left, and he lets it fire. It was unbelievable. It was doctorate-level quarterbacking by Tom Brady. Now, Kevin King, it was terrible by Kevin King.
He had a hard day.
But
yeah, no doubt.
You're right. It wasn't all Kevin King on that play.
Well, he had a lot of other F-ups during the game, obviously. You know, I thought we can talk about the PI call late in the fourth quarter, which I thought was the right call. But I also agree with what other folks are saying, that it was wildly inconsistent the way they called the game yesterday. There's no question about that. But think about life as a Packer fan for a second here. You got Aaron Rodgers, who's got the highest passer rating in the history of the National Football League all time. You've been to one Super Bowl with him, just one. You've been waiting 10 years to get back. He's been to the conference championship four times since they won that Super Bowl over Pittsburgh, I believe it was, and they've lost every single one of them. And two of those conference championship games, you could blame the defensive coordinator. Mike Pettine is the defensive coordinator in Green Bay for that fakakta call he made yesterday at the end of the half. And then how about going back to 2014, the game against the Seahawks in overtime, zero coverage, nobody over the top. What do they do? Jermaine Kearse, boom, touchdown, game over. Packer fans have got to think we are absolutely wasting the prime years of one of the great quarterbacks in the history of the league because our defensive coordinators are morons.
Yeah, it's not just here. I know fans love to dump on Pete Carroll and the Seahawks coaching staff. It happens everywhere. We saw it with Sean McDermott yesterday. We saw it with Green Bay yesterday and Matt LaFleur. But no, you're exactly right. It was an embarrassment what Aaron Rodgers had to deal with yesterday. Yes. And what I mean deal with is Aaron Jones dropping every single dump-off pass thrown to him. Equanimeous St. Brown dropping a monster two-point conversion right in his hands.
Off his chest. Then
the Pettine and then the LaFleur errors. Aaron Rodgers, I thought, played a pretty damn good game. He made one crucial mistake. And I want to ask our guest from Green Bay at 3:45, was that Aaron Rodgers saying, I can make the tough play hero throw, cross my body into double coverage. I don't have to take the easy way out and run into the end zone because there's no question in my mind he either gets into the end zone or at the very least gets to the 1-1.5 yard line where you set up fourth and goal at the one.
Yeah, he's not scoring on that play. I've gone back and watched it over and over, but I agree with you. They would have gotten a lot closer and it would have made things a lot easier on fourth down.
On your play call, yeah, you could have done anything.
For sure. There were two guys waiting at the goal line. White and Davis were right there, and by the time he takes off, I think both those guys are making a break for Rodgers. And look, unless he can juke two defenders, I think he's getting inside the five potentially, but that's about it. But even then, again, you're talking about making your decision easier to kick on fourth down. I just think the fundamental idea that we're going to trust our defense against Tom Brady and our kicker Mason Crosby and take the ball out of the hands of our quarterback, and then people are kind of getting on AR for being salty after the game. What do you expect he's going to do? This is literally like a half an hour after one of the most crushing losses of the guy's life. You want the guy to be handing out recipes for crying out loud? So I love it. You know, I love the emotion. I love the passion. I love the fact that he's pissed off because guess what? If I'm a Packer fan, I'm just as pissed as him after that game yesterday. So we'll talk about this. 3:45 today. Gabe Neitzel, I believe it is, will join us from Green Bay, ESPN Milwaukee, as a matter of fact. He does the Packer pre-half and post-game show. So I'd be curious to know what their post-game show was like yesterday. Painful. We'll talk to Gabe about that. Is that the end of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay? Dave Sims is going to join us at 4:20. Lots of talk about spring training getting pushed back and his thoughts on the passing of Henry Aaron as well, the NFL playoffs, and then Brian Schmetzer, who finally, thank God, the world's worst kept secret. Brian Schmetzer's contract is official. He's not going anywhere. He's definitely doing better than Bob, and he'll join us at 5:20 tonight right here on Softy and Dick.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your exclusive home of Super Bowl 55, Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR. And
we got to, at some point, I think, find a way to sneak in some Husky basketball chatter, huh?
That's two in a row. That's called a winning streak. It
red
has
hot.
Happened before.
Red hot, baby. Red hot. I mean, you got to figure that.
Why not, huh? Let's laugh about it.
Well, they weren't going to go. Like John Wilner's been saying all year, they're not going to go 0 for the season.
Right.
Right, and so they were going to get one, possibly two, and one carried over into two this weekend, and who knows, they may get another one. I mean, I do like the fact that it doesn't take you more than 5 minutes to watch the improvement over what we saw most of the season. So
yeah,
that's good,
yeah,
and hopefully that will continue the rest of the season, and maybe we can all not be so fatalistic when it comes to the future of Mike Hopkins by watching the last month of this year.
Well, I still think they have to start playing some defense, but right now I think they just got to win games any way they can do it. And if that means just running the floor and getting 1,000 possessions a night and just outrunning somebody, then I'm all for it. You know, I do think that Mike Hopkins is in a pretty big hole with Washington, and we'll see what happens down the road. But can they find a way to get back to respectability in the Pac-12? Can they win 7 or 8 games or 6 or 7 games by the time it's all said and done? That's probably asking too much, but can they find a way to – I mean, dude, is there even going to be a Pac-12 basketball tournament? Do we know what the status is of that? That's a question for John for tomorrow. But yep. I'm sitting here thinking, man, if they can get hot at the right time in Vegas, well, I don't think they're going to Vegas, number one. I mean, the NCAA tournament is in one state, for God's sake.
Right.
So I have no idea what the plans are for the Pac-12 basketball tournament, but they need to show improvement. I think at this point, that's what you're asking for if you're everybody involved at Washington. Get better as the year goes by. Don't have this little blip on the radar in January and then fall apart again in February and be down in the dumps again in early March. Get better. Have the graph going up as the year concludes, wherever and whenever that is.
Well, can you get some cohesion, too, going into next year? Can you get the same players playing the same minutes? Because in reality, we know what college basketball is about. It's different than the NBA. NBA wins with superstars, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, in college basketball, look at your champions.
Yep.
Villanova twice.
Experience.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
There's no superstars.
Mm-hmm.
They win with players that have been in the same system for 4, 5, and now with COVID, 6 years. So
right.
You have to keep the same core together and then add pieces to that as you go along.
I threw out a question on Twitter yesterday.
You did.
It wasn't really a question. Yeah, I kind of maybe given myself more credit than I should. And we've had this conversation many times before on the air, but you know, the idea of a quarterback making too much of the salary cap where it just screws your chance of winning a title. And I mean, you guys by now know the drill that nobody since Steve Young in 1994 and now 27 years ago has won a Super Bowl with a salary cap over 13%. As a matter of fact, since 94, there's only been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players, and two of them are Peyton Manning, by the way. One in Denver, one with the Colts. Other guy is Eli, Tom Brady once, and Brett Favre with Mike in 96. So that's just 10% or more. Russell Wilson, when the Seahawks won the title, was taking up 0.5%. Okay, not 5%, 0.5% of the team's salary cap on his original rookie deal. Brady in 2016 was at 8.9. Patrick Mahomes this year is at 5.34. And Tom Brady this year is at 12.6, just under that 13.08 threshold that Steve Young had back in 94. So, look, I'm not sitting here advocating to get rid of Russell Wilson at all. I'm just asking, is there a concern that after Russell Wilson got his fat contract, the odds of them winning another title actually may have decreased. And if they did decrease, if the odds are, if it's still possible, but the odds are against you, how do you overcome that? How are we going to overcome Russell Wilson taking up, according to overthecap.com, a gigantic percentage of your salary cap? It's at 15.5 this year, 18.1 next year, and 16.3 in 2022. That's significant. That is a significant portion of your salary cap. So besides not spending $7 million a year on Greg Olsen, how do we find a way to get around this?
Now, that $18 million for next year, is that on the projected lower salary cap?
I believe it's based on the projected, $175 million cap. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So if the cap stays the same, it may be obviously lesser than that, the percentage.
Well, you're going against history, and you're also going against logic by trading two first-round draft picks for Jamal Adams, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because those two first-round draft picks would help you supplement your team when you've got to pay your quarterback so much. And now not only you gave away, and I'm not saying I was against it, I wasn't against the trade for Jamal Adams. I'm just saying it does put you in a tough situation twofold. One, you don't have cheap players, first round draft picks for 2 years in a row that could use to supplement Russell Wilson. And two, you're pretty much telling yourself, all right, we got to pay Jamal Adams a lot of money too. So now we've got two guys making a bunch of money along with Bobby Wagner and the other two or three high price guys on the football team.
And DK Metcalf in a year from now.
You're exactly right. So, I don't think anything should be off the table at this point. I mean, I think we've gone long enough now where nothing should be off the table. If you got a deal that you absolutely couldn't refuse and somebody called you up and said, hey, you know what, we're going to give you first-round draft picks 3 years in a row, we're going to give you this young talent, and we're going to give you this young quarterback for Russell Wilson, I mean, you seriously have to consider something like that. I think it would be foolish not to consider something like that because of what you just brought up.
Well, here's the thing. So that 15.5% salary cap number, I was wrong. That is actually based on the cap continuing to rise. If the cap, there's been rumors and reports, and who knows what this will look like. Nobody has any idea what the salary cap is going to do next year. I mean, hell, the cap may drop and the NFL may give teams some relief, right? You know, be able to go above it or whatever, you know, mini Larry Bird rights for a year on certain players. I got no idea what their plan is, because all of a sudden the Seahawks, who have a cap number of 32 million dollars for Russell Wilson, if that comes down like that next year, you're talking about almost 19% of the cap if it drops to 175 for next year. So they're screwed in a lot of ways. And I just think you got to be uber careful if you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll. You can't be wasting money on guys like Greg Olsen and Luke Jokel, number one. Number two, you're right, you got to protect your capital in the draft, which they kind of did not do with Jamal Adams. And then number three, they have to find a way to get creative. They really do. If that means resuscitating old careers like they did with guys like Barkevious Mingo back in the day and Deion Jordan, bringing in guys like that may have flamed out elsewhere but may be able to have their careers revived in Seattle. And the best example I can give you, a guy they did that with, is Brandon Browner. I mean, Brandon Browner was in Canada playing football in the CFL. He was a nobody doing nothing. Yep. And then he comes over here and did pretty damn good for a couple years before he went bananas and got suspended. So just guys like that, you have got to start getting creative. And I totally agree with you, man. It is against every fiber of my being to think about moving a guy like Russell Wilson when you spend your entire life trying to find one. And I would actually rather have the Seahawks find a way to work with him than to get rid of him. I'm just wondering out loud, is that becoming too tall of a task now for this front office and this head coach?
I don't know if it's too tall of a task. What these quarterbacks have to realize, and it starts with Aaron Rodgers first, because his contract comes up before Russell Wilson, and then Russell Wilson right after him when his contract can get an out after he's 34 years of age. These guys got to realize, hey, history tells you if you're making $40, $45, $50 million a year, which is obviously going to be the going rate at that point for a quarterback, you're not going to win. So you need to swallow your pride. You've made, at that point, you know, a quarter of $1 billion playing NFL football.
Yep.
Go to a place that is ready-made, say, I'm going to sign a 3-year contract with you for like 10% of the salary cap and go win Super Bowls. And then you, Aaron Rodgers can save his career. Russell Wilson, whether it's here or someplace else, when he's 34 or 35 years of age, he can resurrect the dominance he had when he wasn't making any money. That's, I think that's really the only way outside of being very, very lucky in one particular year.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to get multiple Super Bowls now.
Well, I think, I wonder if it's a conversation the Seahawks will have with Russell, and I wonder if he's even remotely interested in having that conversation. He may say, all right, if that's what you want to do, then once my deal's done, I'm out of here. I'll take off. And that's his prerogative. You know, but look, I'm looking at an article from a couple years ago that was written at businessinsider.com that says Tom Brady gave up $60 million in salary in New England to keep the Patriots competitive. And as Ian said in Crosstalk, I mean, who knows? Maybe Bob Kraft will give him half the state of Massachusetts when he retires. Maybe he gives him half of a car dealership or half of a business building or whatever to kind of wink, wink, make it up. But he when they last won, I think it's 2018, right? They won the championship. There were 45 guys making more money than Tom Brady in the National Football League. And that's not the case for Russell Wilson right now. So I think there's two things. Number one, if Russell Wilson doesn't take a pay cut, if he doesn't give the Seahawks down the road some salary, well, I mean, first of all, does he have to do that? Can they win? Can they win another title with Russell's current salary structure? If you say that they can't, then we can go down a certain road, and that road says, okay, well, what if Russell Wilson doesn't want to take a pay cut? What if Russell Wilson does not want to renegotiate his deal and give the Seahawks any cap relief? Do you consider moving him? Do you consider dumping him and going in a different direction? How do you handle this? If you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll and you firmly believe that you cannot win a title with Russell Wilson making the kind of money he's making now, which, by the way, if they believe that, I don't think they would have signed him. Because I think John Schneider and Pete Carroll are about winning championships first over everything else they do. So if those guys thought the day Russell Wilson signed his last contract, man, dude, bro, Pete, if we sign this deal with Russell, we're not going to win squat. We are done. We are cooked. We are finished. They don't believe that because, number one, they're not wired to think like that.
Right.
And number two, they would never think like that. I'm not sure if any coach in the NFL or GM would think getting rid of my star quarterback is a better way to go when it comes to winning a championship. And your odds of winning a title with Russell Wilson, I mean, I'm just tossing numbers out here, Dick. Maybe it's 4%, 5% with Russell Wilson as your starting quarterback now moving forward. It's also possible if you get rid of him, that 5% becomes a 1%.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true. You have to have an answer there. I think best case scenario is what you just painted out, and that is they can come to some semblance of agreement where Russell can realize, hey, I've got generational wealth for my grand-grand-grand-grand-grand-babies, okay? I want to win more Super Bowls, and I understand that the way to win more Super Bowls is to make $20 million a year instead of $42 million a year.
Right.
And that's the way to win more Super Bowls. I can buy 5-6 more quality players on my football team, starting caliber players, by taking that type of pay cut. And if he's not willing to do that, then the second best thing that they should do is really start looking for at what quarterback over the next couple of years they want to sink their teeth into, and they trade Russell Wilson before he just walks for nothing or for a compensation of a draft pick.
Well, according to Over the Cap, if Russell Wilson stays through his current deal through 2023, he'll have been paid $230 million by the Seahawks. Now, he's not taking all that home. He's paying a lot of taxes, obviously. And I just think this, man, you know, it's hard for us to kind of even comprehend this because it's so stupid the amount of money these guys are making now. But I remember when A-Rod signed his deal with Texas, somebody said, well, what does Alex Rodriguez need $250 million for? Well, honestly, when you get to that stage of your finances and you're mingling with different types of people, it's the difference between, instead of leasing that private jet, you now own the damn thing, right? Yeah. Instead of leasing that mansion and that resort on the private island, you now own the island. Instead of owning 45% of the company, you now own 51% of the company. Because trust me, no matter how much money you're making, there's always more. There's always more to be had. There's always more to do. There's always more to accomplish. So I have no idea what Russell Wilson's dreams and aspirations are. All I know is this. He did talk a couple years ago about wanting to be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. Remember that? You can't be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL with one title. You just can't.
No, you can't.
So he's got to give him, see, his team is going to need help to get him to where he wants to be.
And use the Alex Rodriguez comparison. I don't begrudge Alex at all because there's no salary cap in baseball.
Totally.
So,
right.
So that the New York Yankees can build a championship caliber team, whether Alex Rodriguez is making $50 million a year or $10 million a year, because they can pay whatever they want to build a championship caliber team. The Seattle Seahawks and the rest of the NFL cannot do that. And I'm hoping the more that this gets out there, the more it's being talked about in the media nationally, that one of these quarterbacks not named Tom Brady, and maybe it's Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Aaron Rodgers just, you know, falls on the sword and says, my reputation and my legacy is more important than me making an extra $30 or $40 million in the back end of my contract.
Yeah, well, Aaron Rodgers is only making 10.8% of the Packers cap right now. So he's even under that threshold. So he may not have to do something like that, unless the Packers front office is so inept that they need as much help as they can get. But you and I just got done talking yesterday about the play calling and the decisions they made from a coaching perspective in that game. I don't think the Packers lost that game yesterday because Aaron Rodgers is making too much money.
No.
Okay, at all. Now, you can argue, well, they drafted Jordan Love in the first round, and they could have maybe used that on a running back or another wide receiver or a tight end or
an offensive back.
Whatever. They could have done anything with that pick. And then, I was playing golf this morning with a buddy of mine, a Packer. He said, well, yeah, that's what the Packers do, though. They set themselves up for after that guy takes off. And I was like, that's great for them, but how does that help Aaron Rodgers?
Right.
Doesn't help him at all to do something like that. So I think the franchise, obviously, is first and foremost. And if you're a Kansas City fan, you got to be thinking, man, we got to hit now. We got to hit in 2 weeks.
No question.
And we got to hit next year before Mahomes' contract in 2022 goes bananas. We got a shot to win 3 Super Bowls in a row.
They can be a dynasty.
I think if you're a Kansas City Chief fan, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, Dick, if I told you in 2022, which is when Mahomes' big fat deal starts to kick in, he's making $31.45 million in 2022, first year of that 10-year deal. If I told you in September of 2022, opening day for the Chiefs that season, that they only had the one title, would they look at that as a disappointment?
If they starting the year where his contract
Correct.
Balloons?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Starting and based on the same spot, meaning they lose in 2 weeks and they don't win it next year. I think they would look at that as a disappointment. Because they may never win another one with Mahomes.
Yeah.
If they don't get it this year and get it next year, they got 10 years of salary cap hell with Patrick Mahomes, or it's going to become exponentially difficult to win a championship.
So that would be saying, if you would ask a Seahawk fan in 2017 or 18, with the last 4 or 5 years of disappointment, I don't think Seahawk fans would have said that, right?
What do you mean, in 2017?
Well, like when Russ in 2018 was his last year of his last contract.
Right,
but he was
still
making some decent money in his last contract, right?
2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 was his fourth year. So I believe 2016 was the first year of his massive deal.
So let's go back to 2015. It's a better comparison.
Right.
If you would ask a Seahawk fan after 2015, has the first 4 years of Russell Wilson's career been a disappointment, I don't think anybody would have said yes.
I don't think they would have said it would have been yes for him, but would they have said it was disappointing the Seahawks at that point did not have another one after the LOB was breaking up and falling apart? I mean, for him, absolutely not. He was doing great. He was doing phenomenal. And Patrick Mahomes will always do phenomenal. I don't mean a disappointment in regards to the way Patrick Mahomes has played. I mean a disappointment in the fact that the franchise has not won another championship. And with that defense and going into the 2016 season, LOB was kind of breaking up, kind of falling apart, maybe some point then and there. I think there were some folks that would have said, yeah, that was a downer. And maybe it's different now because there's so much talk about the cap, right? There's so much, and Patrick's deal is so ridiculous with a $500 million contract that it might just land differently. So I don't know. I'm curious to get your thoughts at 49451. Let's head to Green Bay, Wisconsin, as opposed to Green Bay, Florida, and get their thoughts on what the hell happened yesterday to the Packers coming up on Sunday.
To Softy and Dick. Now, back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
We're having a great time. We're communicating. And the conjecture is for clickbait.
news stories you guys can put on your websites.
Softy and Dick on 950 KJR.
All right, baby. Let's head out to Green Bay, Wisconsin. Technically, I believe Milwaukee. 94.5 ESPN Radio in Milwaukee. Morning show host. Packers Radio Network. Pre-game, halftime, post-game. Which means he's got to get to bed and get up early for a show tomorrow morning. So we won't keep you very long. Gabe Neitzel with us on the Beacon Plumbing Hotline. Gabe, how are you, man? What's going on?
There have been better Mondays, that's for sure.
I was asking my partner here how peeved we would be if we were Packer fans watching Matt LaFleur send Mason Crosby out there on that fourth down field goal attempt yesterday. What was your reaction when you saw your kicker coming out instead of Aaron Rodgers?
A little bit of disbelief, but, you know, after the kick goes up, then you're just kind of hoping that they can get the stop, which obviously they did not get. I think that's kind of the one thing that, during that game, a lot of people here in Wisconsin are thinking, man, 4th and 8, I mean, do you want the opportunity with your MVP quarterback, or do you have to try to stop the guy who has, you know, won 6 Super Bowls? And I think the Packers would have, you know, maybe like to do that over again and give their MVP quarterback one last shot at the end zone, especially considering how good they were in the red zone throughout the course of this season.
Well, Gabe, I feel for you, man, because I had the honor to do the post-game show for the not giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch at the one-yard line game. So you can – I totally feel your pain right now. But in that game, everybody just called up and wanted to talk about one play, one decision, whereas this game wasn't really one play, one decision. You had the end of the first half, and then you had the last 2 minutes of the game. So where was the acrimony from Packers fans?
I mean, a lot of focus, I think, towards the end of the game. That decision, the pass interference on Kevin King, which, I mean, it was a hold. I mean, if you've seen the pictures on social media, he clearly grabs his jersey. The issue is they didn't really call that the entire game. There were a lot of instances where there was a lot of grabbing back and forth. The interception, you bring up the end of the first half. The interception at the end of the first half, Sean Murphy bunting, grabbed a hold of the jersey of Alan Lazard. It wasn't called, and I think everybody was okay with it. Just, okay, that's the way they're calling the game, and then they decide to throw the flag at the end. So a little bit of inconsistency there. So you can point to that. You can point to Kevin King getting burned at the end of the first half, allowing someone to get behind him in that situation when Tampa Bay doesn't have any timeouts. You know, worst case scenario there should be you just keep him in front. They attempt a field goal. Maybe they make it. Maybe they don't. It's, you know, always tough to kick field goals at Lambeau Field in the month of January, especially if they're a little bit longer. And unfortunately, Kevin King lets Scotty Miller get behind him. So that's tough. But the one thing that at least I think was a tough pill to swallow: the Packers intercepted Tom Brady on 3 consecutive possessions.
Yep.
Tom Brady threw 3 picks in 7 attempts. They capitalized on the first, but the next 2, they went 3 and out on both. So they didn't capitalize on the turnovers. So, it's one of those situations. I mean, I'm talking to you guys in Seattle. When I think about the Packers-Seahawks game from the NFC Championship game back in 2014, there were so many things that had to go wrong for the Packers not to win that game for Seattle to come back. The Packers had so many things and so many opportunities yesterday where they just didn't capitalize, and that's ultimately why the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are representing the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Gabe Neitzel, ESPN Milwaukee with us. You mentioned 2 3 and outs. It was actually 6 plays for -5 yards on those 2 possessions that you're talking about. It was horrible by Green Bay's offense. But getting back to the play by Kevin King, yes, you're right. He let the receiver get behind him. But with 8 seconds left in the half, why not call a defense that prevents that bomb from happening?
Yeah, that's another thing where you're kind of wondering why they don't have 2 high safeties to kind of help that out and have some help over the top. Instead, they just had the single high safety in the middle of the field, and that is certainly, but at some point, so I do a show with in the mornings with Mark Chmura, and former Packer, went to the Pro Bowl 3 times, and at some point, as he said this morning, you could call things to help him out. But at the same time, you have, as a football player, you have to be smart. You have to know what the situation is. And Kevin King kind of squatted for a little bit, and that's what allowed Scotty Miller to get behind him. And he just, you have to be smarter in that situation. Yes, could Mike Patton, Packers defensive coordinator, helped him out? Certainly. But Kevin King's got, he's got to be held responsible for that play as well.
Gabe, can you talk about the miscommunication that was obviously there between Rodgers and LaFleur? Because Rodgers said after the game that kicking wasn't his decision, and he didn't know LaFleur was going to kick on fourth down after LaFleur gave him the option to call the third down play. So Rodgers is like, well, I might have called a different play if I knew we were actually going to kick a field goal on fourth down.
Yeah, that's one of those situations where, you know, there's no two-way communication. You know, it's LaFleur has access to Aaron Rodgers' helmet, but the helmet doesn't have access to the headset of Matt LaFleur. So I don't know if Matt LaFleur knew he was going to kick the field goal until he decided to kick the field goal. I mean, these decisions do happen quickly. I think that this was probably a decision that he wishes he would have had back. And LaFleur, the one thing about Matt LaFleur is after these tough games, and there have been a couple of them over the past two seasons, despite all the success the Packers have had going 13-3 each of his first 2 years, where, you know, two games against San Francisco last year where they got the brakes beat off of them. And this is obviously a tough loss this season. Had a tough loss against the Vikings earlier this year as well, where he's just really honest about, hey, you know, I think I made a mistake here. Here's where I can be better. He's still a second-year head coach. He knows he has room to improve. And I think this is one of those decisions that he wishes he could have had back.
Is Aaron Rodgers playing for the Packers in September?
This is the toughest question. So, obviously, a lot is being made over the press conference that he had last night. And, you know, he had kind of hinted that, you know, he wasn't sure about his future. Then he was asked straight up, and he just said he didn't know. And that's something that he's been consistent with the entire season, where he's talked about, you know, he knows that his days in Green Bay are numbered. And with the drafting of Jordan Love, he doesn't know if he'll play out his current contract, which has 3 years left on it. And he was very upfront about that throughout the entire course of the season, talking about how he was taking everything in more and trying to enjoy the ride a little bit more. I think ultimately that you just can't trade the league MVP. I can't fathom a world in which that happens. But at the same time, like, there is clearly something that needs to be repaired between the front office of the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and that needs to be addressed. And I think that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later. The longer that this sits out there and lingers, the longer I think the more complicated, I should say, this situation gets. I think ultimately the Packers do keep Aaron Rodgers, just because, again, if you're Brian Gutekunst, the general manager of the Packers, I don't know how you can defend trading the reigning league MVP.
Unless you know you're going to lose him, and he wants to retire. I mean, tell us what the situation was with Brett Favre. He was only a couple years older than Rodgers is right now, and he decided to retire.
Well, now they were the same age. That's the freaky part. Like, you know, they were Brett Favre was 37 years old when he lost an NFC Championship game after the 2007 season at Lambeau Field of the New York Giants, and Brett Favre decided to retire. The difference here is Brett had done the retirement dance really since about from like 2004 through 2007.
Okay.
And then every offseason here in Wisconsin, it was a will he, won't he situation. And obviously he always came back until he didn't, and actually Fisher retired in 2007. And then the Packers finally just drew the line in the sand when, you know, Brett wanted to come back and they said, no, we've already moved on to Aaron Rodgers. The difference here is Aaron very early in his career said, you know what, probably by 36, 37, I think I'll want to retire. Well, once he got closer to 30 and hit 31, 32, he was thinking, you know what, I'm playing at a high level. Why not? I can play till I'm 40. And then signed the current contract extension that he has that takes him through his age 40 season, and has said since he has signed that he wants to see that out. He wants to keep, you know, he understands that, you know, legacy is important to him, and he wants to retire with the Green Bay Packers. So he has mentioned that he has wanted to play through age 40, and then things got complicated when the Packers decided not just to draft a quarterback, but trade up and get a quarterback in this past draft. And now things are getting a little bit more complicated. Rodgers has never mentioned retiring like Brett Favre did.
Yeah.
So I think Aaron wants to play, and he wants to play out this contract.
All right, man. Great stuff. Go Bucks, go Brewers, and we'll talk down the road, man. Thank you, pal. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
You bet. Gabe Neitzel, Milwaukee, with some thoughts on the Packers losing yesterday. We'll come back and talk about the other side as well. Dave Sims will join us at 420. There's some potential big news regarding the Mariners we got to get to. Coming up on Soft.